Hi, and welcome to the second episode of our special podcast series focused on medicinal herbs and their unique place in the holistic approach to health. Today, host and nutritionist Sarah LeBrun-Blaschke was joined again by Professor Carrie Bone, one of the leading experts in the herbal medicine industry. Today, we're talking about turmeric, one of the most researched herbs in the world in terms of its therapeutic effects. Known for its distinctive golden color and its earthy sweet flavor, turmeric is commonly found on many cooks' spice racks and has long been studied for its association with positive health effects.
We want to welcome back Professor Carrie Bone, leader, expert, author, and professor in herbal medicine. Thank you for being here, Carrie. We're really excited about our topic today, where we're going to dive deep into the areas of stress and viral load associated with the opportunity of turmeric to have a role in that. Turmeric is one of my favorite herbs, so I just want to kind of jump right in with you and ask you the first question. Turmeric is one of the most popular herbs in the world and one of the best studied. What form of this herb do you use in your clinical practice?
Thank you, Sarah, for inviting me again to participate in these sessions. It's such a pleasure to be able to talk about such wonderful and valuable herbs as turmeric. So we all know turmeric. It's in our diet. You know, if you have an Indian curry, it's in that. The form I use of turmeric is a highly therapeutic form, and it's one that's been developed through this perfect match of nature and science. So when scientists began studying the properties of turmeric, and particularly the important phytochemicals it contains, which as a class are known as curcuminoids, but we get lazy and we just talk about curcumin, but there's actually three of these key phytochemicals in the turmeric plant, in the rhizome of the turmeric plant. And when scientists started studying these curcuminoids, or curcumin as I'll refer to from now on, they found that they weren't that bioavailable. In other words, you could take plenty of them in your diet, and they're that orange color that you get from the turmeric, but not that much of it ended up in your bloodstream. So this led to much investigation of, hey, how can we improve the bioavailability of these curcuminoids? How can we get them into our bloodstream? And there are many technologies that are now in use today. Some of them use nanoparticles, and again, because the safety of nanoparticles is not fully evaluated, I'm not that in favor of it as yet. Others use, put a little fatty lipid coating like a phytosome around the curcumin, and that's quite a reasonable technology for improving bioavailability. Some of the early studies used black pepper or piperine from black pepper, and I constantly get this from my patients because they've all heard about that. Oh, when I have turmeric, I should have it with black pepper. Well, yes, certainly you can do that as a dietary thing, but it's really superseded technology. There are much better options. And the problem with using black pepper or piperine to enhance the bioavailability of curcumin is it will also potentially, if you have enough of it, a lot of products don't have enough of it in there to really work, but if you do have enough there for it to really work, it's also, if you're taking prescribed drugs, it will interfere with those too. It might enhance their absorption as well. So you run the risk of this herb-drug interaction problem. So the form of turmeric as the curcumin-rich extract that I settled on for my clinical practice uses a natural technique. It's entirely natural. So there's no synthetic chemicals involved. There's no unknown technology in terms of safety, like nanotechnology. It just purely uses a matrix of compounds from the plant fenugreek to enhance its bioavailability. Now, when the scientists developed this and they tested it out, they found something quite extraordinary. And that was that when we take these curcuminoids into our system, they get metabolized by the liver, first pass metabolism from the liver. And you form these, what are called phase two conjugates of the curcuminoids. Now, I'm sure they're still active, but because they have another large molecule added to them to add, enhance their excretion, some of these molecules, they're designed to go out of the body, not to penetrate tissues. So some of these phase two conjugates probably don't get as much tissue access as you'd like. So if you're looking at the difficult to access tissues like the respiratory system, the brain, you might not be getting the access you like. And what they found with this fenugreek enhanced curcumin product, they found that it actually had high levels of free curcumin in the bloodstream, so much able to access those difficult to access tissues. So based on a very thorough and extensive review of the science, this is the form of turmeric extract as a bioavailable curcumin that I've chosen for my practice.
So the science, as you talk about in regards to the combination of the fenugreek and the curcuminoids, can you elaborate a little bit on the bioavailability of that? Because, you know, I think that's one of the things that we see in the scientific literature that maybe gives people pause about curcumin, is that it's not as bioavailable.
Yeah. Well, the first thing is it is a case of buyer beware or even prescriber beware, mm-hmm. In that there are many people claiming big numbers, you know, it's like a numbers game, you know, my bioavailability uplift is bigger than yours sort of game. but in reality, you've got to look at the science behind it. How well was that study done? Is it humans? Is it in animals? How many people were involved? How was the study designed? Is it published in a peer-reviewed journal? And is it really showing an uplift in the bioavailability of free curcumin versus these conjugated phase two metabolites? So there are all of these questions that need to be asked. So in the when you're calculating your bioavailability uplift, you're using just a straight curcumin product. So have you designed the straight curcumin product so it doesn't even dissolve, you know, in the stomach, you know, to get a really good uplift factor? So all of that caution needs to be applied in interpreting the data. And as a result, I think if you're getting, as you do with this fenugreek curcumin combination, if you're getting an uplift of 30 to 40, that is quite tremendous. And if that's been validated in humans in more than one study, that's even better. And that's what applies to this particular product. And also, when they did a dose response study, they found something quite extraordinary. Now, normally you would expect as you dose higher, because various pathways of absorption might get saturated, you would think that your bioavailability uplift would go down. But they found the exact opposite. When they dosed higher, the bioavailability uplift factor actually went up. So it went from the high 20s, 30 to around 40. So that to me is a tremendous advantage. And what I want to stress is that these bioavailability enhanced products like this one, they really are totally different from dietary turmeric. Now, because dietary turmeric gives you a good full complement of the phytochemical spectrum of turmeric, I do recommend that just about everyone I put on this product, that they also have turmeric in their diet. And to me, you're going to get an ideal synergy from that. But what I want to stress is that this kind of bioavailability enhanced product, you're really moving into a highly therapeutic realm as opposed to turmeric just in your diet, which does have health benefits, of course, but this goes beyond. And if we look at the studies that have been done on the curcumin products, and a lot of them are high-dose curcumin as opposed to bioavailability enhanced. But if we look at these studies that have been done, there's been more than 17,000 scientific investigations and more than 400 clinical trials. So we're dealing with one of the most researched herbs in the world in terms of its therapeutic effects.
I mean, I think that's really fascinating, the opportunity to enhance the bioavailability. So, and also, I mean, obviously eating the herb is important, but it's not getting that bioavailability beyond the GI tract. So when you're thinking about your patients who you're recommending these more bioavailable forms, you know, what are the clinical use that you're using in your clinic?
Well, it's vast. And this highlights another of the quite extraordinary properties of curcumin and curcuminoids, is that they use the scientific term pleiotropic, which means that it's almost extraordinary. It's like you say, whatever there is that can happen beneficially in the body, you know, curcumin seems to do it. It has this broad beneficial activity. It's like it's almost got an intelligence designed in it that all it can do is benefit, and that benefit is hugely broad. If we wanted to summarize it in one category that's most dominant, it's anti-inflammatory. But it's not like anti-inflammatory like a drug where you're just suppressing the inflammation and any benefits that might come out of that inflammation. It's a much subtler touch. And it's subtle because of this pleiotropic activity it has, or even the term is used, promiscuous activity that it has. It will just sort of nudge, you know, maybe there's a pathway with 20 steps in it, and it'll nudge each one and or most of them, because it's got this broad activity. And therefore, you can get quite a profound effect with very little perturbation of the body's biochemistry. And what that especially does is it allows resolution of the inflammation. There's nothing wrong with inflammation per se. It's pathological inflammation that is the problem that we all face today. And why is it pathological? Because it's non-resolving. It goes on, it's chronic, and doesn't resolve. So I believe that curcumin can, because of its subtle and broad spectrum activity, can help resolve inflammation. So where does that really show up strongly? It's healthy aging. So for example, it's something I take every day. Of the product I use, I take 2 tablets every day. Then we could go to a next functional layer. So I've spoken about inflammation. The next thing that curcumin interacts with is a very important cellular protective pathway. That's called the NRF2 pathway. And that's the subject of many hours of discussion. And I have done webinars on it before. But what the NRF2 pathway does is 3 key things. It does biological antioxidation. So rather than, you know, as you often read, I need to, you know, have this supplement because it'll be an antioxidant in my body, that just provides this passive blanket chemical antioxidation, which you know, may in some circumstances not be ideal. Whereas if you go with biological antioxidation, you're stimulating those antioxidant defenses that are already there inside the cell. You know, you're catalase enzyme, your glutathione levels, your superoxide dismutase enzyme. So you get this biological antioxidation from the curcumin stimulating the NRF2 pathway. The second aspect of stimulating this pathway is detoxification. And the third aspect is it supports mitochondria, the energy powerhouses of the cell, all at once from just this pathway. And it's almost like, you know, if you sat back in a chair with a committee and said, hey, let's design the perfect pathway for cellular protection that does everything desirable we want. Well, the cell already has it. It has it in this pathway. And hey, let's then design things that stimulate this pathway. Well, they're actually already there in nature. The plant phytochemicals prime or stimulate this pathway. And that opens up a huge vista of clinical applications that I don't really have time to go into. Let's look at what spins off from that now. So if we look at inflammation resolving, well, we know that there's benefits of curcumin in pain syndromes, in type 2 diabetes and fatty liver, because they are chronic inflammatory conditions, in autoimmune disease, osteoarthritis, even in things like low mood, because there's now a big understanding of mood problems and depression that neuroinflammation, unresolving neuroinflammation drives that. Now, autoimmune disease, again, they're inflammatory conditions. So from that anti-inflammation effect, you get that spin-off as well. From the NRF2 and especially the mitochondrial support aspect, you get, you know, more energy, more efficient cellular function. And that too touches on the metabolic disorders like type 2 diabetes and fatty liver. There's another important aspect of what curcumin does that I'll mention now, and that is it boosts the microcirculatory health and generally the health of the lining of the big blood vessels, which is called the endothelium. So endothelial and microcirculatory health. And from that, you give benefits, for example, in kidney function and in eye health. And again, just looking at herbs and how we can benefit the microcirculation, it would be the subject of, you know, several hours of discussion. Mm-hmm. So you have all of these benefits rolled into just this one herb and just this one set of phytochemicals, the curcuminoids.
So as we kind of dive deeper, you know, and think about how the current situation in the planet, and we think about the viral probably aspects that are happening, you know, there has been some recent studies on turmeric and its role as an antiviral. Can you give us a little bit of background on that and maybe how you've utilized that yourself in your practice?
Indeed. Well, absolutely. And this surprised me. I must confess that this is an aspect of turmeric that I had largely ignored. And obviously in the current situation, I went to looking, hey, what herbs do we have that might be clinically relevant as antiviral agents? And stress here the clinical relevance. Now, the big underlying issue of the clinical relevance of antiviral activity is you can mix a herbal extract with viruses or infected cells that are infected with virus in a test tube or directly with the virus, whatever. And you can see activity, and you can see activity for hundreds of plants. But is it clinically relevant? Because one of the big issues is what you're seeing giving that activity in the test tube, is it bioavailable? And particularly, as I was discussing before, in the case of free curcumin versus conjugated curcumin, will it access difficult to access tissues like the respiratory system? So with bioavailable curcumin, we have that critical question already answered in the positive. So interestingly, the most extensive investigation of the antiviral activity with curcumin has been for HIV-1, human immunodeficiency virus 1, that causes the syndrome known as AIDS. Now, when they discovered that activity in the early 1990s, they then did a clinical trial and it failed. It didn't show any sort of clinical benefits, but that trial was done on a form of curcumin that didn't have its bioavailability enhanced. And it's such a pity because a kind of interest was lost at that critical point in time because they used the wrong thing. Subsequently, there's been multiple research of the mechanisms, again, for HIV-1. And again, because there's this multifaceted, this promiscuous activity of curcumin, it's found that it actually inhibits many aspects of the virus's function, its entry into the cell. And anything that can inhibit entry into the cell of a virus is very important. Entry into the cell and then reverse transcriptase, where it's an RNA virus, it needs to make a DNA copy of itself because it's a negative RNA strand. So reverse transcriptase, integrase, which incorporates the copy material into the nucleus, is inhibited. Protease is inhibited. And there have been human studies of curcumin in people with HIV that show that it reduces the neurotoxic effects of the virus and improves quality of life. So it's acting on various pathways. Now, it has a very broad, it's not just the HIV-1 that the curcumin is active against. It has very broad activity. Some of these viruses that I'll mention are in vitro, in test tubes, but also some of them are in animal models. And particularly in influenza A, it was shown to reduce viral load and also reduce the influenza A's capacity to induce cytokine storm. So here you have with curcumin a unique combination of properties in that it is both anti-inflammatory and antiviral and may, for not just one virus, inhibit viral entry into the cell. So getting in early, and if the virus does take hold and the immune system can't cope with it, that anti-inflammatory effect will help. Now, there's a big debate, will anti-inflammatory drugs help reduce the risk of cytokine storm? And this is still being debated because one of the problems with anti-inflammatory drugs is they interfere with your immune response. So yes, they stop your immune system from going overactive, but they might then make the immune response too underactive. And there's some studies from the past that suggests that using strong anti-inflammatories to inhibit cytokine storm as a response of a viral infection can actually make things worse. But here you have a unique combination of properties of antiviral and anti-inflammatory. And I think that makes it ideal in these situations. And we have in the animal models that it both reduced for influenza A, that it reduced viral load and lowered the risk of these inflammatory cytokines being generated. In other words, lowered the risk of cytokine storm. So I think that's, again, a very unique advantage of this herb, of turmeric, and especially the bioavailable curcumin. If we have a look at other viruses that it's been shown, at least in test tubes, to be active against, but we know it's bioavailable. Possibly some of these are animal models too. It includes herpes simplex 1 and 2, the vaccinia virus, the Ebola virus, respiratory syncytial virus, hepatitis virus B and C, the norovirus, which causes gastrointestinal problems, cytomegalovirus, which is another very nasty herpes virus, dengue fever virus, and even some viruses that are not enveloped, like the Coxsackie virus B3, which can cause cardiomyopathy. Mm-hmm. To me, it's just fascinating. And as I said, I really wasn't focused on this property of curcumin, but the data is there, and it's very extensive.
You know, you made an interesting point before that I think might just help to clarify for the audience, you know, the difference between anti-inflammatory drugs versus the anti-inflammatory effects of turmeric. And, yes, you know, as we see in resolution models, the anti-inflammatory can like block that resolution model, right? And not allow it, yes, to happen. But where, and if I'm understanding you correctly, turmeric is not going to have that, or curcuminoids are not going to have that exact effect. And so it's still going to allow the resolution. It's not going to block it like we see in the anti-inflammatory drugs.
Yes, absolutely, because it's quite different. It is quite different in that regard. And the phenomenon that I was talking about, where you get the gentle nudge of many steps in a biochemical pathway or a, mm-hmm, physiological response pathway or whatever, they have a term for this. They call it network pharmacology. Now, some researchers have absolutely jumped on this idea for herbs, and you see these wonderful, very, very hugely complex, beyond my brain, you know, complex patterns where they've worked out the network pharmacology, not just for individual phytochemicals, but for herbal combinations with their multiplicity of phytochemicals. And it really is, I think, an exciting new development in our understanding of how herbs work. And it can explain why something that is pharmacologically gentle can be clinically powerful. Mm-hmm.
That's a powerful statement, right? You also mentioned, and I'm going to kind of change our thought a little bit from the area of stress, but you talked about the role of neuroinflammation, right? And also, yes, that the bioavailability of these forms and how they get to where they're supposed to be. So when we think about stress specifically and having the herb to get to where it needs to go, you know, there's an interesting study, and I think that was done in shift workers in regards to occupational stress and anxiety and the role of turmeric in helping to resolve that. And I think, you know, this, your discussion earlier about the neuroinflammation and the ability to get there is really leading up to how this can be such a powerful tool in helping people, you know, get through stress.
Mm-hmm. Well, the first thing to say is that if you want to get effects in the brain, generally the agent has to cross the blood-brain barrier. So it's yet another barrier to consider in the bioavailability discussion. And we do know from animal studies that curcuminoids can cross the blood-brain barrier, but they're more likely to do so, as I alluded to earlier, if it is in the form of the free curcumin, not the conjugated form. So I suspect with these products and the product I use that particularly does deliver the free curcumin into the bloodstream, you are better able to get neurological effects. And this was shown, therefore, this fenugreek turmeric combination. As you mentioned, there was this, I think, hugely significant clinical trial, very important and certainly highly relevant to today's situation. So you may say, there's not really strong evidence. There's hints, but there's not really strong evidence like a big study with people that taking bioavailable curcumin every day is going to reduce my chances of catching a viral infection, for example. But if in the current situation you are stressed, and that very same product has been shown in a clinical trial to reduce your stress, why wouldn't you take it? And any prevention of viral infection or any prevention of the risk of cytokine storm is an added bonus. There's a little aside I'd like to say here, and that is that one of the factors they're seeing as a potential risk of cytokine storm is their health, is your endothelial health. And as I touched on earlier, yep, curcumin covers that as well. But let's go to this study. They used the model, as you said, of occupational stress, but this would apply to any form of life stress that a person is suffering. And they took the product with the fenugreek that delivered 400 milligrams of curcuminoids a day. So that's four tablets of the product that they used a day. And they found that the bioavailability, they also studied that, was enhanced by 40 times. So really good uplift. And they gave it for 30 days. And that's an important point, that it didn't necessarily diminish, the bioavailability didn't diminish. And they looked at four factors: quality of life, stress, anxiety, and fatigue. Now, the psychologists have developed questionnaires that assess these four things. There are a range of questionnaires. So they used well-validated questionnaires to assess quality of life, stress, anxiety, and fatigue. What did they find? They were all down, and they were big numbers. They were clinically relevant responses. A lot of times people do clinical trials and they see a very small effect, but because of the nature of the statistics that apply, it might be statistically significant. So they can go to, you know, the journal and say, hey, we've got a positive study, publish this because it shows a clinically significant, a statistically significant effect. So is this difference might be statistically significant, but is it clinically significant? If it's 5%, who cares? So the numbers that they saw in this study were really significant numbers. The anxiety score, and this is hugely important, dropped by 40%, 40%. Fatigue, and again, we can relate this both to the psychological aspects, but also the fact that curcumin boosts mitochondrial function. Fatigue dropped 25%. Perceived stress, so subjective, hey, I'm feeling stressed, dropped 20%. And the quality of life score went up 15%. So these are very significant numbers. The other thing they did in the study was they compared it to just a standard curcumin product that didn't have the bioavailability enhanced. Now, the standard curcumin did show benefits, but they were much reduced on these numbers I've given. They were a little bit above placebo, but not these big, big numbers. The other interesting point was they also measured antioxidant markers in the cell or in the bloodstream that would reflect what's going on in the cell. And this comes back to, again, the fact that we know that curcumin activates this NRF2 pathway. And here, probably in the very first clinical study ever on curcumin to do this, they demonstrated highly significant improvements in cellular antioxidant activity. So you don't need to take your, you know, your vitamin E or eat all these foods to get, I mean, you should, well, certainly with the
right,
foods
of course.
You should,
yes.
With the foods you should to get, what I'm saying here, let me rephrase that, the concept of antioxidation is totally misunderstood at the popular level. Hey, I should drink green tea because it's full of antioxidants. Hey, I should eat berries because they're full of antioxidants. That's all based on test tube experiments. What is really beneficial is what pathways these phytochemicals, these plant chemicals, interact with. And the real story here is that true antioxidation is biological antioxidation, which is which is brought about by stimulating this NRF2 pathway. And they showed this in this study, that the NRF2 pathway was significantly upregulated because they saw a 40% jump in glutathione in the bloodstream. So you don't need to take glutathione as a supplement. You can just stimulate your body to make more. And how do you do it? Well, this clinical study shows high-level evidence that you can do it with curcumin. Catalase enzyme was up 20%. One molecule of ascorbic acid, you know, will quench one free radical.
Mm-hmm.
Enzymes like catalase and SOD, superoxide dismutase, which was up 70%, will quench 1 billion free radicals per second.
Right.
What would you rather have, you know? So this is the power of enhancing biological antioxidant, and it's occurring inside the cell where you need it. So not only did this study was really important because it showed four key things. It showed that, yes, bioavailable curcumin gives you much better clinical results than straight curcumin, although the straight curcumin did have some benefits. It showed that you can get significant effects on what people face every day, which is stress, in terms of reducing fatigue, reducing anxiety, and lowering perceived stress and improving quality of life. That's number two. Number three was it showed that you could affect biological antioxidation, you know, in a significant way with the curcumin. And that's the fourth point, that we can say that you don't necessarily need to supplement with glutathione to get higher levels in your bloodstream, and more importantly in your cells, because what was happening in the bloodstream would reflect what's happening in the cells.
I mean, I personally have found this study very interesting, and I mean, who isn't stressed today? There's not, I think, one person. I mean, you kind of have to be living under a rock not to believe that. I know in our household, we've added the enhanced form of the turmeric to our daily regimen. And I feel like we're getting through this all pretty well. So, you know, my husband and son and I all take it. And I have to say, it also has a beautiful smell. So that probably helps with, you know, reduce the stress too, as you open the bottle every morning.
Yeah, a bit like curried egg because of the fenugreek in there.
Yeah, right. Exactly. So we talked about stress. We talked about, you know, the viral load, and we talked about there's so many others, and we probably need a second podcast on turmeric to really dive deep in some of those other areas like neuroinflammation and endothelial function. But, you know, as you look at the outcomes that you see in your clinic today, you know, can you give me a couple examples of what you've really seen when you've utilized, you know, the enhanced version of turmeric in your patients?
One of my big uses, as I said, is in resolving inflammation. So I do use this product a lot in osteoarthritis. And there have been studies that have shown, clinical trials that have shown, that it's as effective as the current drugs in osteoarthritis. And what's more, when you add it to someone who might need a conventional drug, you get an additional effect from adding this product, the curcumin, to the osteoarthritis. I also, it's very core in my use in autoimmunity, and I see great results there. I use it as I have a microcirculation protocol, which involves, you know, elements of diet, plus the herbs gota kola, ginkgo and grapeseed extract. But when I want to get an extra bang for the microcirculation, I will use this product as well. I've seen it do good effects, you know, on blood sugar and blood lipids. I've seen it all as part of a combined protocol help people with depression and mood and anxiety problems. So, yeah, all of those effects I see. I usually don't just give it on its own. It's part of a protocol, but it's a very valuable and core part of that protocol. But in a lot of cases, I'm using it for disease prevention. In a lot of cases.
Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, as a daily part of the regimen, you know, it makes sense for many, many people, right?
Absolutely. So, you know, long ago, we started putting fluoride in the water supply. And I'm thinking in an enlightened age, they'll probably put this in the water supply.
Maybe. We might all be a little bit oranger, though, or at least the water will be a little bit oranger, right?
Well, this is the thing, you know. I once went to dinner with a friend who's Indian, and she sliced up the raw turmeric. And we were just munching it away as part of the dinner. And I went and cleaned my teeth that night, and you know, the toothpaste and my toothbrush were totally orange.
Right.
But it doesn't last, you know. The curcumin gets oxidized, and so it goes away. So you wouldn't be orange for very long.
You would, right. You'd have to eat a lot to be orange, often. Yes.
Yeah. But this actually highlights one of the issues with curcumin's limited bioavailability is that it does oxidize fairly readily, and when they analyze what happens when you ingest it and it gets to the stomach, you tend to lose, you know, 60-70% just from oxidation. What some of these technologies do, including the one I use, as I've been talking about, is they do protect it from oxidation. And that's one big, big factor that enhances its bioavailability.
For sure. Well, last question before we end is what are some of the new exciting clinical developments that you see in the use of turmeric and curcumin?
Look, one really interesting area is in people who are, you know, working out or professional athletes, that sort of thing. Because one of the problems we have with, strong, persistent exercise is muscle damage. And that limits, person's training because they need recovery times and things like that. And what they've shown in a number of clinical trials that if you have the bioavailable curcumin, some of these have been straight curcumin in very, very high doses, but so you get even better results with bioavailable curcumin. You get less muscle damage, for example, after what they call eccentric exercise, where you're jerking all around in different directions and so likely to damage muscles, or after a half marathon. And here we have an interesting point because that little bit of inflammation you get in the muscles, it actually triggers pathways that help you build stronger and better muscle. So do you want to necessarily bring inflammation down? Well, what they showed in one study was that you actually get a better effect if you take it after the exercise. And so if you take it after the exercise, you're not interfering with the beneficial effects of the inflammation after you exercise, but you're helping that inflammation resolve quicker so you can go and exercise more. So I see that as a very significant aspect. Also, what's coming through very, very clearly in the literature is that curcumin is a metabolic corrector. So they're looking at studies in women with polycystic ovary syndrome, for example, in people with metabolic syndrome and insulin resistance, with people with fatty liver, and with people with type 2 diabetes, and they're seeing metabolic correction. So how does that translate? Well, insulin levels drop, insulin sensitivity improves, blood fats, blood lipids go down to more normal levels, blood sugar goes down to more normal levels, liver enzymes go down, markers of chronic inflammation go down, even serum cortisol go down. But I think what will really, really interest our listeners is that body weight goes down, BMI goes down, waist circumference goes down. So one study they did in fatty liver, just by taking curcumin, waist measurement dropped an inch. A meta-analysis of 11 studies showed that taking curcumin, just doing that, drop body weight by 2.5 pounds. That's what a lot of these drugs that they give for body weight, that's the level at which they act. And here the curcumin did that. Body mass index was down. So I think that's a really, really another exciting aspect of its use. And again, so that highlights yet another value of its use as a preventative agent, because you're correcting your metabolism. And how's it doing this? Well, I think a lot of it comes down to this effect on mitochondrial function. Another really, really exciting area is a further exploration of this aspect of curcumin and its benefits in the brain. And it appears that they're not just confined to reducing neuroinflammation. So we now actually have high-level evidence, evidence from meta-analysis that curcumin helps improve mood. But we're also seeing studies on the neuroinflammation side that when it was added to the drug medicine of people with schizophrenia, it improved their symptoms. And another study and these are all clinical studies I'm talking about, not rats, not test tubes, clinical studies. Another study where it boosted this very important factor called brain-derived neurotrophic factor. And again, that then sparks to another key aspect, which is coming through in some studies, short-term studies admittedly, and that is the benefit of bioavailable curcumin, especially bioavailable to the brain and crosses the blood-brain barrier, in improving cognition, and what's more, arresting the decline in cognition that can help them with age. And BDNF, brain-derived neurotrophic factor, is one of these key factors that may be part of this story.
Well, I think, you know, what we've learned today is that curcumin is an extremely powerful herb throughout many different facets of the body, right?
Absolutely.
Any last words before we close?
Oh, just a recap that I think that to me, this is something that everyone will benefit from because of this pleiotropic activity, but especially its disease preventative activity. So, you know, I have this situation. I take many, many herbs now for preventative role. Touch wood, they seem to be working. And I have patients complain to me, oh, you've got me taking, you know, I've added them up. I'm taking over 4 or 5 products, 14 tablets a day. And I say, well, I take 24 and I'm healthy, so what's your problem? And I think I think if you don't want to take 24 a day and you want to start somewhere with two key herbs, then the bioavailable curcumin and, of course, echinacea root that we've talked about before,
yes,
they are the two key ones you should take every day.
Perfect. Well, thank you for providing us with, you know, in-depth information on the role of curcumin, turmeric in stress and the viral world and many, many, you know, other areas. I think many of us can benefit from taking a daily dose of curcumin. I know me and my family do. So thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Sarah. It's been a pleasure.
For more on turmeric, curcuminoids, and their associated beneficial effects rooted in years of scientific study, visit holisticmatters.com. That's holistic with a W. We'll have a variety of time-stamped references and notes from today on the podcast page for this episode. And if you missed last month's episode, don't forget to check it out to hear an in-depth conversation on herbs, the innate immune response, and the cytokine storm. We'll be back again in July on the first Friday of the month with more on herbal medicine. This podcast was brought to you by the Holistic Matters podcast series from holisticmatters.com, powered by Standard Process. The music featured on this episode comes from a song called New Day by Lee Rosevere, licensed under a Creative Commons Attribution License.